Welcome to On the House podcast by Benchmark, where we tell you the truth about real estate and home ownership. In this episode, we have a guest. Our guest today is Diane Glenn, a Benchmark branch manager in Allen, Texas. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Right out of the gate, what do you love about your job?
You know, I love giving honest feedback and education to clients because there's so much dishonesty and non-education that's not correct. So that's probably the biggest thing I love to do, is just giving the feedback and the knowledge.
How do you make yourself stand out?
The honesty, really honestly, just giving that honest feedback and giving the clarity and not just telling someone, but showing them. So I think it's, you know, a lot of people just talk, or they read online, but when you can give them the numbers and show it and like be clear with it, I think that's really what I thrive on and helps me stand out, that and communication.
So making sure it's really transparent with your clients.
Yeah.
What got you interested in working in the mortgage industry in the first place?
You know, probably shouldn't say this, but I was horrible at math in school and did a couple years of college and decided college was not for me. And so I was hired as a receptionist at a mortgage company and then just grew my way into that and was like, I'm not going to the next step. And then I got to the next step and then just fell in love with it. It was just something that just clicked with me. I don't know why numbers click with me now, but it's just every day I truly get up and I love what I do. And
that's
I think
great.
It's just like helping people make a dream come true, because a lot of people think they could never own a house.
Yeah. The old-fashioned way.
Yeah. So I just kind of lucked into it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Can I ask you a few questions about mortgages? Since we have you here.
Of course.
It's not every day we get to interview somebody, especially a loan officer, who knows more about that side of mortgages.
Yeah.
First question is, what is debt-to-income, or DTI?
So debt-to-income is where we're looking at your gross income, not your net, so your gross income before taxes and deductions. And then we're comparing that to your debt that's on your credit report. It could be child support as well. And then your projected mortgage payment for your home.
So what about my car loan?
If your car loan's on your credit report, we're going to count your car loan.
What about personal debt?
Personal debt in regards to credit cards, yeah. If it's on your credit report, we're going to pull it in. But we're not going to be looking at utilities, grocery bills, et cetera.
So it's based on the credit report?
Yes.
Okay.
Mainly based on the credit report.
Oh, what are the exceptions?
So exceptions would be child support, alimony. So if something pops up in a divorce decree and you're obligated to pay your ex-spouse, then we have to consider that.
Okay, that makes sense too. Next question is, how do I know if I can afford to buy?
That's a tough one, because you won't know until you meet with a lender. So typically, you're going to have to sit down with a loan officer and talk about your budget and your goals, and then you're going to have to think about, what do I want to afford every month? So most people go after, here's my rent. My rent's $2,000, and I'm really comfortable at $2,000, but I could probably stretch it to $2,500. And that's when we sit down and say, okay, here's your debt, here's your income, here's your price point, here's your payment. And then we just kind of back into it that way. A lot of people will say, okay, my payment's $2,000. They go look at a house for $2,000. They don't have the money to spend more. They qualify for more. But then they're like, okay, well, you know what? I'm gonna up my budget so I can get a better price point, get in a better neighborhood.
So a lot of people could be scared to buy.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't want to be pressured into buying.
Yeah.
But they still want to know.
Yeah.
What's your advice?
I think really you need to sit down and talk about, first you need to look at your numbers. Sit down with a loan officer, look at the numbers, look at the high value of that. And then what I like to do, and most people should be doing, is look at the outlook. So you can buy a house for $200,000, but in 5 years it could be worth, let's just say, $250,000.
Yeah.
So a lot of people look at their savings of like their cash savings, what they're putting in their checking account, what they're putting in their 401k, what they're putting in their savings. But you also have to kind of diversify and go, okay, is it worth it to go buy? Because I can build my equity through my home. And then in 5 years, you could have $50,000 extra, and then you could move up. So it's just really sitting down and looking at that big picture and saying, okay, can I do it now? Do I want to do it now, or do I wait? And does it make sense?
So it sounds like future goals could play a really big part.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep.
Next question is, what's the best loan type?
Woo! Well, if you're a veteran, you want to go VA. It really depends on your credit score, depends on what you have to put down, and do we need to go into like down payment assistance to help you be able to do it. So there's a wide variety. Some people really want to push their budget, which means their debt to income ratio could be high. And so when they're high, maybe you don't qualify for all those programs. So it's one of those things you just have to explore all of them. I'm really big on, I'm not going to give you one option. I want to give you two to three. And one might be the one I would say go with. But I always tell clients, like, I don't make your payments for you. You make them. So two or three might be the better option for you, and you're going to take it and run, even though I don't agree. But I'm going to pitch all of them, and then let's talk about the pros and the cons. And then you can pick what you want to do.
Why do people have a hard time with VA loans?
You know, it's just a misconception from, I mean, I've been doing it 28 years, and so everyone always is like, the VA appraisers, they never come in appraise right, or the sellers have to pay certain fees to cover the veteran. The veteran can't pay for, which that rule is gone. You know, really and honestly, 28 years, the past probably 10 to 15, I've not had VA appraisals come in low, maybe 1%. So they've really stepped up their game. But I just think there's a misconception that it's zero down, they don't have any money, it's not going to appraise, so they're going to walk away, or their appraisers are bad. But it's really not true. I love doing VA loans. They're easy. And then they also think that they're harder to do because you have to go to VA. But if you find a lender that's VA delegated, and delegated means we don't go to VA for anything but to order the appraisal and get your certificate of eligibility, which is all done online and takes less than 5 minutes. So there are some lenders that are not delegated. So they have to go to VA for underwriting, everything. And that's when it slows it down. So I think the most important thing is, you know, find someone who's delegated.
And how can a veteran find somebody who is delegated?
VA's website has one. Or you just, if you're talking to a lender, say, are you VA delegated?
Nice.
Yeah.
So it sounds like there used to be issues before, but those issues haven't been in place for a long time.
No.
And there's nothing wrong at all with
no.
the VA loan.
Nope.
Nice. What about FHA? Is FHA loans just for people who can't afford a conventional?
No, So FHA was created when I first got in the business, and it was for people that were lower credit scores, period. And now it's turned into people that they want to stretch their budget, and the debt to income ratio can go higher than it could on any other product. And so maybe your debt to income ratio is 52%, which is a little high. That would not pass on conventional. So if you're really wanting to stretch your budget and go up, then that's when you're going to go over and probably go, okay, let's go FHA. Because FHA is going to let you kind of stretch that budget with it.
So why is a conventional loan called conventional?
You know, I don't even know if I know the answer to that. I think probably it's just because it's the norm. It was the norm that's been around before FHA came out. And so that just was the easy route to go and really the only option for a long time.
So it's just what the market had.
Yeah.
It's what everyone really, was used
yep,
to.
Yeah. And so that name just kind of stuck.
Okay. Nice. Another question is, what is escrow?
So escrow is an escrow account. I call it a savings account. And so basically it's a savings account that your lender holds your insurance and taxes in. So every month your payment includes insurance and taxes. And so the insurance and tax portion goes in the escrow account. Escrow account holds it, which is your lender's holding it. Every month the escrow account builds up. Every year your insurance bill is due. The lender pays from your escrow account that bill. Same thing with taxes. So it's basically just like a savings account. And some people like them. Some people don't like them. I have mixed feelings about it. I don't have an escrow account, but then every month when I have to write, or every year when I write those checks, it's just hard. But when you see you don't see the lender paying it. They just pay it for you, so you're not really seeing it. But I like them for people who they just don't have good habits of saving. So maybe they're not going to save the money every year, and then they're struggling when it comes time to pay those bills. So it's not a best fit for everybody to not have escrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have an escrow.
You don't have to have an escrow as long as you're putting 20% down.
Ah.
So if you put less than 20, then you have to have an escrow account. Yeah.
Nice. And what is there a cost or a fee associated with having an escrow account?
Nope. No fee.
They just force you to do it anyway.
They just force you to do it anyway.
For your own benefit.
For your own benefit.
I like it.
Yep. Yeah. And some people love it. Love it.
Okay. Yep. How much do I need for a down payment?
Depends on what loan you're going to do. So it's pretty much standards 3% if you're a first-time home buyer. And so let's talk about first-time home buyer. They think they can never have owned a home to be considered a first-time home buyer. But really the rule is if you have not owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you've not owned a home in the past 3 years, then you're considered a first-time home buyer. So at that point, you can do 3% down and do that conventional loan. But you can walk into USDA where you're going to go buy in the outskirts. You could do zero down, or you can jump into FHA and do 3.5.
Nice.
And then you can go on down from there.
So the average price of the home in fourth quarter last year was $492,000 and $300 per the St. Louis Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
3% down on that is almost $15,000. Mm-hmm. 3.5% down is just over $17,000. What are some strategies for coming up with a down payment?
You know, tax refund season's upon us. You can use your tax refund. You can jump into your 401k. So 401k, typically you can't borrow everything that's in the 401k, but they'll allocate a percentage or a dollar amount for you. Some 403bs will let you do that. Gift from your family members. You could sell a car. You could sell an asset that you have. So all of those would work, or just saving every month.
So there are no rules for where the down payment money can come from unless you're taking it from like an investment account, like a 401k or a 403b.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just have to be careful that it's not like cash that you got under your mattress or you're hiding somewhere in the house and you're just going to go throw it in the bank and deposit it. We can't use cash.
Can't use cash.
Can't use cash. Yeah.
But gifts are allowed.
Yeah. Gifts are allowed.
Is there a limit?
Nope.
No limit.
No limit.
Is there a limit for how much you can borrow out of your 401k?
There is, and everyone has a different amount. So I always tell people, if you've got that option and you need it, call your financial planner that's handling the account and ask them. Typically, you can log in and say, take a loan. And then when you do the take a loan, it's going to tell you the amount you can get, and they're going to dictate what you can spend that money on.
So it's a loan like any other loan?
Correct.
Okay. So the qualifications are going to depend on your own credit history and how much you have available.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then do you have to pay it back? So some of them make you pay it back. There's interest involved, but the bonus to that is most of the time the interest goes back to you. So you're not technically paying it out. It's coming back. So look into that as well.
So you're borrowing from yourself.
Correct.
Nice.
Yep.
Should I use my tax refund or savings as a down payment? So I know that a lot of financial planners and finance gurus will say you should have 6 months of savings.
Yep.
What do you think?
I like the rule of having 6 months of savings, but there's people who, let's be realistic, they don't care, and they just know they can't do that. And so that's fine. But I would always tell people, if you've got the tax refund, like, we need to talk about where to spend it. So a lot of people get it and go, hey, I just paid off all my credit cards, now I'm ready. And then they come to us and it's too late. We couldn't help them dictate where that money should have gone, and paying off the debt was not going to help them. So now they don't have that asset to help them go put down or pay their closing costs because they just spent it. And they could have truly qualified with that debt anyways. So I always like to tell people, don't go spend the money first. Come to us, let's look at numbers, and then let's decide where you should spend it. I'm not going to make the decision for you. I'm going to give you all the information, and you can decide.
You said something surprising.
What?
You said you shouldn't pay off your debt.
Right.
Why?
Well, because then let's say you had $6,000 of a refund, and then you just spent all that six to pay off your debt. Now you have no money to buy a house. So if we could have bought you a house and your payments within your rent, which is what you're comfortable with, that's your budget, and you could have continued on with that debt and had the goals of paying that down over time, then that's where I would say, let's go do it. Let's explore that if you're comfortable with it. Some people want to go into a house and be debt-free, and that's fine. We're never going to push them either way, but I always like to give that option. Because now you've lost the money, and now we can't get you approved, and you can't find the money from anywhere else.
It almost sounds like you're saying it's better to qualify for good debt than it is to get rid of all debt.
Sometimes. Not all the times. Sometimes.
Right. It's personal, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes
case
sense.
Case by case. Yeah.
What about down payment assistance?
Man, there are so many out there. There are so many out there. So down payment assistance, they're always going to have their own rules. And so we have to follow their rules. And typically their rules are they're going to have a debt to income ratio cap. Some do not. They're going to have income limits. So by county, by family size, they're going to say you can't make more than X amount. And some give you percentages based off of your loan amount. Some of that money's forgiven. Sometimes it's not forgiven. There's one out there, they'll give you $15,000. Actually, I think it just went to 17. They make you pay it back over 10 years. So everyone offers different ones depending on the state and the county that you're in. If you don't have the funds and we need to explore that route and you really, truly want to get into a house, we're going to explore it. Sometimes we just explore it, even if it's not an option that you bring up, just because we can help offset some of that cost. You know, you're going to get in situations where a seller is going to be like, I'm not paying a dime. Like, I'm out. Your offer was great, but I'm not paying anything for you. And that's fine. And so when that happens, now you've got your down payment. Now you've got your closing costs, but you don't have enough money to cover both of them. So that's where we would jump in and go, okay, let's look at down payment assistance. Does it work? Do you like it? Here's the rules. And we go from there.
You mentioned sellers.
Mm-hmm.
What's a buy down?
So a buy down, there's two different kinds of buy downs. So this is where everyone seems to be very confused because the 2-1 buy downs were getting really, really pitched last year hard. So a 2-1 buy down is where the seller is going to help you buy your rate down for 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years. Okay. Then you have an option of where you have a one-time buy down. So the one-time buy down is where you're going to pay a fee to get a lower rate, and that fee is a one-time fee, and you pay it at closing. But then you've got your 1-2-3 buy down where your seller finances it. They're going to help your rate be 1 point, 2 points, or 3 points lower over the 1, 2, or 3 year period. And so that one's a little bit more expensive. In this market, there are some sellers that are paying it. It's not real common, but they'll do it. And, you know, does it make sense to do it? You know, we're thinking rates are going to be down in the next couple of years. So if you have that mindset and go that route, it might not make sense to do a 1, 2, or 3 year buy down. Maybe it makes sense to do a one time and be done with it. So you just have to explore all of them.
It's just another option.
It's just another option.
That's nice.
Yep.
Okay, so here's one. What if I don't have good credit?
That's okay. That's okay. So if you don't
have
good... I
can buy a house with bad credit?
You can. Not well, let's talk about bad credit. Are you recently lay on a credit card? Do you recently have something in foreclosure? That's going to be a problem. But people's bad credit mentality might not be our bad credit mentality. So
what
I'll
do
have,
you mean by that?
Well, I'll have some clients that go, my credit's not good. It's really, really bad. And it's typically because they're looking at a third-party platform that's giving them their scores and giving them their trade lines. Typically, the trade lines are pretty accurate, but the scores are not. So I always tell people, you know what? You might think it's bad. We might be able to make it work. So do an application. Let's do a credit check. Let's see where it's at, where it fits in with our rules. And if your credit's not great and we can't get you approved, then it gives us the ability to look at your credit and give you some suggestions and hopefully give you some timelines and then the goals to work towards to get your credit in a better spot.
So part of what you do is to help people strategize about how they can become homeowners, even if they can't yet.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So we have a really little cool tool here. It's called a what if. And I had one I ran yesterday, and they had a past due balance last month on a card. They didn't know. And that was dropping his score significantly. So I only could put him in one bucket for a mortgage, which was the FHA. And they were fine with it, but they were really mad that they had this past due balance. So we went in the credit report and we ran a what if, and we said, what if this balance is zero? Where would his credit score go? So he jumped from a 664 to a 685 if he would go pay that off. And so that's a really cool tool that most lenders don't use because they don't want to spend the money on it because it does cost us as a lender to do it. But if you're that close and we think we could make it work, then giving them that tool is great. Like, now do you want to go pay it off? That's their decision, because it could be $2,000, it could be $200. But having that tool and giving them the knowledge is huge.
It gives them an actionable goal.
Yep.
That's really helpful.
Yep, yep.
Nice. Well, what if I'm self-employed and I don't have a lot of employment history to show?
So typically with self-employed buyers, they have to be self-employed for 2 years. there are caveats to that where you go into like a non-QM higher rate loan with a higher down payment. But for your traditional conventional VA, FHA, they like to see you self-employed for 2 years, and then we pull in 2 years of tax returns. And so the biggest thing with the tax returns is we look at your Schedule C. Typically, everyone's Schedule C. If not, we jump into Schedule E or K-1s. But we look at your net income. So everyone will come in and go, hey, I made $200,000 last year. Well, that was before all of your expenses that you wrote off. So now you're really at $50,000. So that's a big thing that I think a big misconception is people think they look at the gross, but really we're looking at your net. So I think just be careful from that aspect is, you know, are you writing off excessively and then that's hurting you? So you have to think about that when it's time to file of how am I writing off? You know, is it going to hurt me or help me? Probably it's going to hurt you, because that's probably the hardest part for us is they're writing off a lot, which, why, you know, every self-employed person wants to, because you're paying less taxes, but it can be a detriment too. Not all the time.
So you have to be strategic with how you try to reduce your taxation.
Yeah. And I'm not a tax advisor. So when people ask me that question, I'm like, I can't help you.
In the context of buying a home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go talk to your CPA. Y'all need to revisit what you're writing off and what makes sense. And then come back. Yeah.
So it's possible.
It's possible. Totally.
And it's not just any particular loan type.
Correct.
As long as you have 2 years of self-employment.
Well, there are some companies that'll let you go one. But that's when you're going to go into that non-QM world. So non-QM is non-qualified. And that non-qualified just means you don't qualify for a traditional FHA, conventional VA, USDA. So then you're going to go jump into the non-QM world where they'll, you know, they're probably going to make you put 10, 15, 20% down. The rate's higher than market, but it's a deal. And so typically with those clients, we'll go that direction, but we'll set the expectation of, okay, let's do this for 1 or 2 years. We can always refinance you out of it and get you back into that traditional mortgage down the road. They'll do it all day long.
And the reason you wait 1 to 2 years is because?
They need to go rebuild those tax returns.
That makes
sense.
For
future years.
So it's still the same requirement when refinancing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And some people will say, hey, you know what? I'm not changing what I write off. Put me in the non-QM world and I'm good with it. If that's what they want to do, that's fine too.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Say I'm a buyer, but I've never bought and I don't know what I'm in for. What are some costs that I might not be aware of when buying a home? I'm familiar with down payment and interest rate and how that relates to monthly payment.
Yeah.
What am I missing?
So you're going to have title company fees. So you're going to close your loan at a title company because a mortgage company is not going to let you come in and handle all the money from all the parties. So you'd actually go to a title company. Some people call it an escrow office. So you're going to go into one of those companies. So they're going to charge you fees to close you, file your deed. Once you're closed, they're going to handle the money from the buyers, the sellers, the mortgage company. You're also going to roll into lender fees. So obviously every lender is going to charge some fees. But then outside of that, you're probably going to do a home inspection. So that's going to cost you money out of pocket. Some people might have to go into getting a termite inspection. But your home inspection could bring up there's a plumbing issue, there's a roof issue, there's electrical issues. So then you've got to get all these other trades involved. Some may charge, some might charge. So that's really probably the biggest ones. And typically the realtors have the conversation with you're going to have earnest money and option money deposits. So if you're in a state that does earnest and option money, you'll have to put that up front. But that is a cost that you get back. But when you go into the like home inspection, plumbing, electrical, those are fees you don't get back. They're just out of pocket.
So when do you pay earnest money?
You pay the earnest money once your contract's accepted by the seller.
Nice.
Every state's different of when it's due, but you have to pay it within a certain time frame after it's executed by sellers and buyers.
What about homeowners insurance?
Well, that's a hot topic right now. So you do have homeowners insurance, and homeowners insurance is part of our quote we give you as a lender as part of our fees. So when we give you a cost sheet, it's going to show lender fees, title company fees, what we think your homeowners insurance will run, what we think your property taxes will run, and then we're going to show you that escrow account that we talked about earlier and how that's set up. So homeowners insurance, I typically tell people that go get a quote from whoever your car insurance is with now, or you have renter's insurance, go with them and get a quote. And then get us the quote. Let us take a look at it. We'll give you your new payment, give you your new numbers. We might even say, hey, go shop it and get a couple of quotes. Typically, I always tell people to go get a couple of quotes because right now insurance is all over the board.
What about property taxes?
Oh, property taxes. So you've got property taxes on your home you own. And so that's part of the numbers we give you as well. So every house is going to have a different tax amount because that tax amount's based on what the county's appraising the house at and what you're being taxed at. So those can vary. I mean, you just never know what's going to happen with them.
So there's a lot more going on than just interest rate and down payment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. How much extra should I plan on bringing to the table in addition to my down payment if I'm buying a home?
You know, that's a tough one because you have to look at lender fees and title fees. So as a loan officer, you know, we're obligated and expected to give you an estimate based on what we think those fees are going to be. Even though we're not in control of title company fees, we're not in control of taxes or insurance, but we still have to give you an educated guess. You know, it's hard to give a percentage because every state is so different of what those fees are. Some states have a state tax stamp fee that could be $1,000 for one purchase price, but it could be $200 for another purchase price. So that's really a hard one to answer. I always give the cost sheet, and if you're looking at a certain property, we'll go pull up the taxes for you, which I would think any loan officer would do or should do. But sometimes they come in and go, we don't have a house. It's just this price point, this city. And then again, we have to go in and give an educated guess. So I typically try to aim a little bit high in the beginning on those because I tell everybody, let's aim high, knowing we're going to come in low and not have surprises, and you're not mad at me down the road at closing. But okay. That's a hard one to answer, to be specific.
Yeah. That makes sense. So it's just something to be aware of that I will have to bring more.
Yeah.
The only way to find out for sure is to talk to a loan officer.
Yes.
How far down the exploration phase can I go without a hard pull on my credit?
Everyone's different on this. You know, we do soft pulls here and it's allowed, but there are some lenders that don't allow it. They just do a hard pull right out of the gate. I don't do those anymore just because there's many reasons. I'll back up on that. So if you come in and you do a hard credit check, your credit's dinged. And then we can't get you approved because your credit's bad, you don't have the income, whatever the reason is. And then we just hurt your credit, and then now you've got to recover from that. So what my team does is we jump in and do a soft pull automatically because then we're not hurting your credit, but we have all your scores, it's a credit report. And so then we go in and come up with your financing options for you, talk to you, review them with you, and then when you're ready to go under contract or make an offer, that's when we're going to go do a hard credit check.
So not until you're ready to make an offer.
Really, yeah.
So I can find out what my earnest money will be, mm-hmm. what my closing costs will be, title fees will be, estimates, everything else. I can pretty much know what my payment will be without having a hard credit pull.
Everything. Yep.
So if I really want to know, best idea is to talk to a loan officer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's very little risk involved.
There's very little risk involved. But you need to make sure you're talking to a loan officer that's going to give you a cost sheet. So I'll have clients come to me and go, oh, well, they tell me my payment's this and my rate's this and my purchase price is this. I'm like, well, what are your fees? And then they're like, well, I don't know. I'm like, they didn't give you a cost sheet? No. Well, then how do you know what you're getting is fair? How can you go shop that if you don't know what you're getting from them? So that's where I'm very open and clear. It's like you need to always ask what the costs are because the costs are going to trigger the rate. But it's also going to trigger your down payment and out-of-pocket expense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a lot of the online mortgage calculators that are so common and easy to find, mm-hmm. though they seem really useful, they may not tell enough of a picture.
They don't. So typically what they're doing, they're giving you the rate or they're giving you the APR. And so your APR is your rate plus some of the finance closing costs, but they're not giving you a breakdown of what those closing costs are. So typically they're giving you the lowest rate they have, not lowest rate they have, but let's say they're going to build in 1-2% extra fees. So, I mean, that could be $2,000, that could be $10,000, but they're pitching it and selling it to make this rate look pretty because everyone seems to be so rate driven. And they're like, man, they're awesome. Why can't you do it? Well, then is there a fine print on there showing you what they're charging you? Typically, no. Because legally, all they have to do is give you that APR.
So the difference between interest rate and APR, what is it?
Oh, man, everyone asks this question. It's so convoluted. So I'm going to give you the short answer, because in my opinion, I don't like APRs. And I understand why we have to give them, but I don't like them. And I don't like them because legally all you have to do is give a rate and APR. But the APR is part of your closing costs, not all of them, that they finance or add into your note rate and do like a percentage. And so it's very confusing. So I tell everyone, you can look at the APR all day long, but if you don't know what fees are being charged to you, then why do you care what your APR is? Go look at the fees, because that's what your APR is driven off of.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's interest rate plus fees combined.
Right.
APR.
Not all fees.
Only
just
some. Which ones?
Oh, God. There's so many. Woo! I don't even know. I'd have to look at a chart. I truly do not look at it.
Okay.
Yeah. I truly do not look at it.
So there's no way to really know.
You should look at your closing cost sheet or your estimate.
So I can't determine my own APR at all?
Nope.
Okay.
It's lender.
And neither can the online calculator.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. It's a number that the online calculator is just throwing in.
Okay.
Yep.
To know the real picture, you should talk to a loan officer.
Yes.
It keeps coming up, doesn't it?
And get that closing cost worksheet.
Okay. Here's another question for you. How much should I plan to spend to buy a house versus renting? Is it more expensive to buy a house than to rent? Or is it more expensive to rent? Age-old question. What's your take?
You know, I typically tell everybody, I have people that come and go, I know my budget. My budget's a $3,000 payment, no more than $3,500. And here's what I have to put down. Those are the questions I always ask, is what's your budget for monthly payment and how much money do you have to put down? That's when I start backing into, okay, here's your option for your payment. Here's your option for your cash to close. And if I can't get those two to match, then that's where we have to come up with another option. So some people come in and they don't know what their budget is. So we always go, okay, well, if you don't really know what it is, then let's just start with, what do you pay for rent? Are you comfortable with your rent payment? If you're not, then why aren't you? So what are you comfortable with? And then we'll start from there. Typically, we'll start from there, give them their numbers. Some of them are like, love the numbers. Some of them are like, looks great. They go out and look at that price point. Now they hate the numbers. And they come back and revisit and say, okay, can't find a house in that price point, or I found my dream home, I'll never move again. I really want this house. How can we make it work? And that's when we talk it. We just have to jump into it and say, okay, here's what you need. You don't have the money, but can you get the money? That's where we would jump into the gift, jump into the 401k.
Okay. So is it worth it to buy a house? So you mentioned fees and taxes and insurance and this long-term monthly payment. How long does a mortgage usually last?
It means averages 30 years.
30 years.
Yeah.
So I'm locking in this payment for 30 years. Sounds expensive.
Nah.
It's not expensive. But the question is it worth it to buy a house?
You know, everyone's situation's different, because maybe their plan is they're only going to be in this house for a year. Does it make sense? Are you going to recoup the money that you're going to put into this in 1 year? That's when you go to a loan officer that can run the numbers for you. Some people will say, you know what, we're here for five. Well, your appreciation rate over 5 years, you're definitely going to build equity in that property. But then you also have to look at the big picture of repairs, maintenance. It is your own home. You can do what you want to it, because that's what most people get frustrated with now, is they can't hang something on the wall. Or if they paint the room, they have to repaint it before they move out. So it's really each person's own individual needs and then their future outlook. What I tell everyone. Or maybe they're in town for 3 years. They have a contract with an employee. They're only going to be here for three and they know they're going to move. Well, okay, does it make sense to keep that property as an investment property when you move out and then go buy something else? So some people do that too. It's a strategic plan. And I always tell people too, I did this personally. I bought my first house at 24. I probably wouldn't have if I hadn't been in the mortgage business. But every time I bought a new property, I would move up. So my 24-year-old home was my starter house. It was a little condo, and I loved it. But then every time I just kind of moved up, because I built that equity, took that equity and put it towards the next one. So I was, you know, young enough to be able to do that and just kind of keep growing and building. So I always tell people, you have to start somewhere. It's not going to be the dream home if you're 24 or you're 35, but you need to start somewhere. Because if you keep renting, you're just paying the mortgage for your renter or your landlord. So why? And some people are fine with that. Some people are fine with that. But I always say, look at the long term.
Okay, so the idea in the long term is you're building equity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a path to build net worth?
Yep. Yep. So we were talking about this the other day. You've got your savings, you've got your checking. Hopefully you're saving in your 401k. You might have stocks, whatever you have. But, you know, a couple years ago when COVID hit, I was like, we need to diversify. I feel like all of our money is in all these little same buckets. Like, let's diversify. So I looked at it as in, let's go buy real estate. But I knew if I bought real estate, I'd have to keep it long term to benefit me. And I'm fine with that, but some people are not fine with that. But if you have that mentality and that's what you're trying to do, let's do it. Let's make sense of it. So could you rent it? Could you, like I always say, people look at the market now, tell your realtor, like, I'm going to live in it now, but maybe in 3 years I do want to rent it out. What is it rent for now? Is it going to be enough rent to cover my mortgage and maybe some repairs and expenses that you're going to have as a landlord? So you just have to look at that big picture. And some people don't know how to pitch that big picture. So for me, with the knowledge that I have with it, I can, but there's some people that don't know how, if that makes sense.
It does. So it sounds like as a home buyer, there are perspectives I may not be aware of before going in.
Yeah.
I may not know how to ask the right questions.
Yep. Yep.
What are some things I should be prepared with before finding out?
Finding out if you should buy a home?
Finding out what I can qualify for, if I can qualify.
You need to just meet with an LO. I mean, if you meet with a loan officer, they're going to be able to tell you everything. And then you come in with your questions. Like, I have people that come in and they will have a checklist. And they'll tell me, like, hey, I've got 20 questions. I'm like, great, let's go. And just let's answer them. But you have to be real and honest, because they're not all going to be rainbows and sunshine. Like, it's just, or unicorns. It's like, you have to be honest, and you can't just go in there and sell it just to sell it to get them to buy. Because the last thing I want is someone to call me in a year and go, biggest regret I ever had. So it's like, come in with the questions, let's answer it. And then you have to make that decision as a buyer. Is it the right time?
So it's to your benefit as a buyer to be as upfront and honest with your loan officer as you can.
Yeah. Ask the questions. Don't be scared.
Anything that I'm keeping back could potentially affect the outcome.
Yeah. And a lot of people too are like, oh, I have a dumb question. Well, no question's dumb. If it's 10 o'clock at night, you got a question, maybe you don't want to text your loan officer, maybe you do, but write it down or text it to yourself. Like, keep that list going.
That's good advice.
And ask it. Yeah.
Okay, so do you think interest rates will stay where they're at? Will they go up? Will they go down?
You know, it's an election year, so it's kind of interesting what's going to happen. Everyone I listen to and follow, we really think they're going to come down in 2 years. Of course, you know, a year or 2 years ago, we all said 3 to 5 years. And we have come down. This week's just kind of been a little hectic, but we improved again today. So I honestly do feel like within the next 2 years, we'll be down. Are we going to be back down we were in COVID? Probably not. Do we want to be back there? Some people say, heck yeah. Some people say, heck no. But I do feel like we are going to see an improvement within the next 2 years.
So then should I just wait to buy?
No. Mm-hmm. No. And the reason I say that is because you have to go look at that 2 year outlook. So with every client we're doing now, we're going to give them 2 to 3 rate options or loan options. And then we give them a 2 year outlook so they can see the appreciation they're going to have in 2 years. If they want it for 1 year, we can do it for one. If they want it for 3 or 5, we can do it for 3 to 5. But right now, our standard rule is we're just doing a 24-month outlook so they can see that appreciation and then also give them that payment. So, okay, your appreciation grew 50 grand in 5 years. When we refinance you, here's how much equity you should have, and here's where your payment's going to be. So that way they can see, you know, rates aren't great, but they're not horrible. I mean, historically, we're still in a great rate market. But everyone looks back the past 2 years or 3 years.
Right.
Which, in my opinion, you should just take that out of the equation. But what does it look like now versus what would it look like in 2 years? That'll help them make a decision typically.
So interest rate's only part of the equation.
Right.
Really what you should be looking for is, what is your monthly payment and can you afford it?
Correct.
And the only way to figure out what your monthly payment could be is to...
call a loan officer. Yep. Can't a knowledgeable loan officer. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Make sure it's one that you trust.
Yeah.
Should you trust your referrals? Yeah. Meaning if somebody refers me to their loan officer, should I trust them?
Right. You've got to remember there's loan officers out there that are app takers. Literally, what's your name, what's your social, what's your date of birth? They write it down, pass it off, and you never talk to them again. So who's going to give you that strategic plan that you need? An app taker's not going to. They're literally there to take apps and pass it off and get the business in that door, and it's a machine. So you really want someone who's going to advocate and be honest for you. And you're going to know that talking to them. Start asking them questions. See how they answer it.
That's good advice.
And are you calling an 800 number to get them? Because typically that's an app taker.
Noted. Thank you for that. If I'm a buyer, one of the first things I'll start doing is looking on Zillow at homes. And one of the first things they'll be prompting me to do is to contact a realtor or a real estate agent to start looking at homes and touring homes. Is that the right step?
It's the right step if you know no one. I'm going to just say you always should go reach out to family and friends, coworkers that you know own a home or bought a home or are looking for a home, and say, who are you using? Are you happy with them? And go with one of them. Or look for a loan officer that you know, family, friend, coworker knows. Go to them as well, because a loan officer has got those resources as well. We work with great ones. We all do. So I always say, don't go find them online.
So ask around.
Ask around.
Should you be looking for a loan officer first or a realtor first?
In my opinion, I think you should ask for a loan officer first, because if you go to a realtor first, they're always going to tell you go to a loan officer, because typically they're not going to start showing you properties until you're pre-approved. So you're going to have to come to us first anyways.
So first you should figure out how much you can afford to buy before you even start looking.
Right. Yeah, because if the numbers don't work for you at this moment, then why spend the time with the real estate agent who's not going to help you or go show you anything, because now you don't even want to do it. So let us get those numbers and that price point for you, and then we can help you find a realtor.
So maybe I shouldn't use Zillow to start looking for a home, rather to see what our home is going for now.
Yeah. I tell people, like, go look at Zillow if you're trying to see what's on the market. But don't go to Zillow to look at property values or go look for a realtor or a lender. I'm not saying they're bad. Just saying it's better when you have a relationship with one of those people that you're using.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's impossible to have any kind of estimate of number that you can actually work with until you have that relationship.
Right, right.
Great.
Right.
I don't think I have any other questions that I can think of off the top of my head.
You've done good.
Well, you do this every day.
I do it every day.
What are some things that maybe I forgot to ask or that maybe we haven't accounted for so far?
You know, I think the biggest takeaway is knowledge is power. So if you sit here and tell yourself you can't do it, you don't deserve it, you shouldn't do it, get that mindset out of your mind and call someone. Because I'm never going to push, and no one should ever push you to buy a home, period. If you're not comfortable with it, don't do it. But having the knowledge will help you set your goals, whether that's 3 months, 6 months, 5 years down the road. At least you know what it looks like, and you have the knowledge now. So I always tell people that, even if some people think I'm not deserving. Heck yeah, you are. Let's look at it. Let's make it work. If it doesn't work, then let's make it work in 6 months. Let's make it in a year.
So buying a home is for anyone?
In my opinion, yes.
The only people who shouldn't buy a home are those who legitimately don't want to for their own reasons?
Right.
Yeah. And anybody else, it's available?
Yeah. Some people love to rent. If that's what you love, keep doing it. But let's talk why. You know, some people move around a lot. So they don't want to deal with the hassle. Maybe their landlord mows the yard for them. They don't want to mow it. But, you know, everyone has their own reasons. But don't be scared to ask the questions and, like, go down that rabbit hole of what does it look like and maybe I should change my mind.
Because what's the risk of asking?
Yeah, nothing.
No risk.
We're not going to ding your credit.
That's good.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, I mean, you hit them all.
Thank you very much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent.
Thank you for listening to the On the House podcast by Benchmark. Today's podcast guest is Benchmark Mortgage Branch Manager, Diane Glenn, NMLS 295232. We want to make sure you understand that the information provided in this podcast is for general informational purposes only. The content shared here is not intended to be financial, legal, or professional advice specific to your situation. Mortgage regulations and requirements may vary, and the information discussed may not be applicable to your individual circumstances. Therefore, we recommend consulting with a qualified professional or contacting Arcalatex Financial Services, LLC NMLS number 2143, directly for personalized advice tailored to your needs. Any reliance you place on information from this podcast is at your own risk. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree that Arcalatex Financial Services, LLC NMLS number 2143, its hosts and guests are not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from your reliance on the information presented here. Thank you for your understanding and for choosing the On the House podcast.